Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 13th of December 2015. My name is TLP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Phil from West End Whingers, Gareth James, Nick from Partially Obstructed View, and Julie Raby. We're now going to talk about Wonderdotland at the Olivier Theatre, part of the National Theatre. This is an adaptation of Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland with music by Damon Albarn and book and lyrics by Moira Buffini. And we also have Rufus Norris directing and being listed as the co-creator. This is an adaptation for a fairly contemporary audience. It was premiered earlier in the year at the Manchester International Festival. And Phil, tell me more about this and what you thought of it.
Oh, God, getting me to start. The question is, where do I start? I thought this was absolutely terrible. I thought this was real turkey time Christmas. I mean, it's a mess. The story of the fact that she's sort of the bullied, mixed-race teenager, broken home, she's bullied on social media and at school, and she has this avatar, Alice, which she creates, which is absolutely the opposite of her. It's a white Alice, whereas she's mixed-race and very pretty and very slim, and she thinks she's not slim and all these things like that, was initially a good idea. But as we keep going into the avatar world, I don't care because it's an avatar and it doesn't really exist. I know none of it exists, but bear with me on that. And as the two worlds join and mix up, it becomes really confusing, particularly in the second act. There's a number towards the end where different characters are climbing sort of skyscraper towers, and I just looked at it and turned to the person I was with and with my mouth open. It was sort of a bit Springtime for Hitler for me. If only it had been Springtime for Hitler. I thought the music, I mean, I really do like some of Damon Albarn's stuff, and I was hugely disappointed. It really made no impact on me at all. There was a number just before the interval, which is a sort of a take on the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, which was something between Knees Up Mother Brown and The Laughing Policeman, which I think we were sort of meant to come out humming, which I thought was an absolute mess. It didn't make me laugh. It was trying to be funny with some gags. I thought most of them missed quite a lot. The design of it, I didn't even like the design. Ray Smith is a good designer, but these dreary grey blocks which came on, obviously to reflect Ali, who is the lead girl who becomes Alice in her avatar form. I could understand that, but the sort of the avatar world is created with just projections, which initially were quite stunning. But I got tired of them quite quickly because I actually wanted to see real scenery and some real wonder, given it's supposedly Wonderland. The best thing about this, I thought, was Anna Francolini, who plays the headmistress of the school, and she sort of becomes, in avatar form, the Red Queen. She steals the... This isn't really giving anything away because there's nothing much to give away. She steals Ali's avatar, Alice, and sort of takes over. But at the end, you know, is that really a crime? I don't think so. It's an avatar, for God's sake. All right, there's a little bit of another crime, which I kind of thought is hardly a big deal. She's just lonely, and she's trying to instill punctuality and discipline in her kids and stop them using their phones at school. I'm sorry, but what kind of a message is that sending out if she's supposedly the villainess of the piece? I thought this was really inconceived and absolutely... I mean, if you're not enjoying it by the interval, then leave, because it actually just gets worse.
Gareth, what did you feel about this?
Well, I'm not as negative as Phil about it, but I didn't really enjoy the evening. I think at the core of it is a very good idea. I think the idea of an Alice for the internet generation is actually quite a good idea. But it just doesn't work. And I'm kind of struggling in a way to sort of understand exactly what doesn't work. I mean, if we start with the score, it is just very ordinary. I mean, I do have a soft spot for Damon Albarn, and I did see both his, well, they were built as operas, Dr. D and Monkey, although I wouldn't have called them operas. So he's, you know, this is his third musical theatre piece, but he certainly hasn't found his voice in musical theatre. And I thought it was just too ordinary, really. The score of the two, quote, operas, end quotes, were much better. There is a look to it, but it's a bit obvious, you know. It's sort of shades of grey in the real world and multicoloured in Wonderland. It's a little bit too obvious, I think. And I think more importantly than anything else, there's no kind of cohesive style to the staging. It's kind of really all over the place. So it just, I mean, I was wondering whether, you know, is this because I'm seeing a preview? But it was the sixth of what was meant to be seven previews, although I gather they continued previewing a while longer. So, I mean, it was the, you know, it was a sixth performance. They'd already done it up in Manchester, although I gather it's been substantially rewritten since then. So it just, I couldn't make my mind of whether it just wasn't ready or wasn't good. And I think I've come to the conclusion in the end that it just, you know, they were never going to make it work before the opening night because it just wasn't good enough, really. Anna Francolini was good, although it is a bit of a panto villain, I think. And I was just a bit amazed that Carly Borden, who plays Alice, frankly, was like Anna Francolini's double. It was quite extraordinary. I mean, the performances were, you know, the two kids were okay. And I think the one I enjoyed most was Paul Hilton's dad. I think he kind of pitched his characterization very well. But it was just a very ordinary and different evening in the Olivier Theatre where we're used to expecting a lot more, really. I mean, it is a bit of a turkey, although having since been to see both Here We Go and Evening at the Talkhouse, the National has two even bigger turkeys for Christmas than this. So, disappointment for me.
I will say, just to be a little bit less negative, that the costumes were at times very good, quite imaginative. They're by Katrina Lindsay, I think. And I liked sort of the opening with Hal Fowler sort of sitting and coming on for the phone warning, which is a twist on the turning off your phones warning, in a mobile armchair thing. And I thought, oh, this is going to be quite good, because it did get quite mixed reviews at Manchester as well. But I actually did read one review since it opened on and say that actually they thought it was better at Manchester and it's got worse, which is... I don't know quite how they managed to do that, but I think the concept is initially wrong. I think there's a problem with doing shows about avatars. It did work with, say, the Nether, where the plot and the idea was very, very clever, but with this, because of the switching in and out, it becomes confusing, and you don't care either. It was charmless.
I think it's fair to say that, you know, that night, I mean, the audience, they received it fairly well. I mean, I felt I was a bit of an odd man out, really. The audience seemed to be much more enthusiastic than me. I don't know.
I mean, including myself, there were six of us that were there. And I, you know, that's not including Tim, who we didn't speak to at the interval, and you, who we didn't run into. And at the interval, the comments, I mean, what I'm saying is quite mild by comparison, because there was the woman taken ill the night we were there, which they had to stop the show. And I did feel sorry for the cast and because it disrupted things. But for me, that was almost became a highlight. And Web Cowgirl's comment at the interval, like, can't possibly repeat it here.
We have to be fair, though, Phil. I mean, we are all of a certain age.
That's true, but we
most. I wonder whether this just wasn't for us, really. I just wonder whether that's what it's all.
Well, there was to be fair, when the show was stopped, when the woman was taken, the elderly gentleman next to us offered us sweets, and at the end, he misheard a comment, which he thought we said, what a great Christmas show, which, and in fact, we were saying something far from that, and he had loved it. But we did hear a teenage boy saying, it's just a girl playing with her mobile or something like that. I can't remember what it was, I wrote it down somewhere. So obviously he wasn't liking it either.
You mentioned Katrina Lindsay doing the costumes and Ray Smith doing the design. I've noticed lately this is a bit of a trend of designers kind of getting together. You know, designers in their own right, because Katrina Lindsay is a designer in her own right.
Yeah.
Gather and collaborate. And I noticed on something last week, I can't even remember now, Sutra Gilmore was doing the costumes for somebody else's design. And I think it's... Well, and they all happen to be our brilliant lady designers as well. I mean, I think that's a bit of a trend at the moment, because you've got two... You know, for the look of this show, you've got two great designers.
Yeah, I agree. And there's a lot of designers around who are fantastic at the moment, I think. There's Hildegard Breckler and, as you say, Sutra Gilmore. And who's the other one? Yeah. Designer that's very, very good.
Miriam
Breckler, yeah. Is that, have I pronounced that correctly?
Berto, I think it is.
Berto, yeah.
Anyway, Tim, we haven't asked you what you thought.
Well, I'm very inexperienced with musicals, as you know, so it is always rather difficult for me to criticise. I mean, I did kind of have a lot of difficulty with anything that has lyrics that include the phrase www.wonder.land, and using that as a song lyric, it did make me feel rather uncomfortable. And there were, you know, a few clunky bits like that. And some of the musical things impressed me in their variety, but I mean, they're not exactly... Yeah, there was nothing really show-stopping. I mean, they certainly tried a show-stopping number. Well, it was sort of classic musical where you have two lovers or former lovers on stage in their individual spotlights at different parts of the stage singing at each other, which was a scene with Paul Hilton and Golda Rocheuvel. I always liked Paul Hilton, but I was most impressed by Golda Rocheville's singing, actually, in that. I thought they went the wrong way with Anna Francolini's character, because there is that very touching bit where she discovers Alice and can talk to Alice, and you think it's kind of going one way, but unfortunately she just turns into a straightforward, nasty pantomime villain instead of something which was rather touching. I kind of hoped that they would go a different way with that. But yeah, it is a bit of a mess. It kind of worked in the end, but I was not satisfied, and I did wonder if this is what musicals are all like.
They're not.
No good.
And does anybody else, there was the number Everybody Loves Charlie. Do you think that was deliberately trying to make us laugh with that, or was it just, was there a wink, wink, nudge, nudge about that?
I thought it was a ham-fisted attempt to make us laugh, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, we were laughing for the wrong reasons quite often, but anyway.
I think that I'm going to start a book, but Paul Hilton doesn't get through the run without breaking something, because the choreography during the tea party scene, where he has to climb over tables that are moving, I just cannot believe he's going to get through every performance without breaking.
No, hats off to him for that. Mad hats off of him. But
gosh, oh my God. Am I going to see another accent, having already had the lady upstairs?
We're now going to talk about The Homecoming at the Trafalgar Studios. This is Harold Pinter's play. It is directed by Jamie Lloyd and has a cast that includes Keith Allen, Gemma Chan, Ron Cook, Gary Kemp, John McMillan and John Sim. It's designed by Sutra Gilmore, although it is really just a perspective box, I think, a wireframe perspective box with minimal furniture. In fact, I think the only seat is the big chair that is supposed to dominate the stage in the play. Gareth, tell me more about this and what you thought of it.
Well, I've been off Pinter for quite some time, and I kind of stopped going. And then when this company did The Hot House, I was kind of lured back because the casting was to die for, really, and also the creative team, which I like very much. And I found myself enjoying it. And so this one lured me back as well, for the same reasons, the creative team and the cast. And lo and behold, I found myself enjoying it again, really. And I was reflecting on why is that? And I think that I came to the conclusion on Tuesday that all the productions I'd seen that drew me to the conclusion I didn't really want to go and see any more Pinter were just overly reverential and very conservative and very earnest. And I think somebody described as the Peter Hall look. And it was the productions I wasn't enjoying, frankly, not the plays. So that was a bit of a revelation to me here, because I really did enjoy this. It's about Max, who's widowed. He lives with his two younger sons, Lenny and Joe, and his brother Sam, in a big house. He was, I think, a butcher in his working life. Sam is still working. He's a chauffeur, the brother. Joey, the younger son, is a demolition man by day and a sort of sometime boxer by night. And Lenny is a bit more ambiguous, some sort of pimp, we think, or I thought. They're all very nasty to one another, especially Max to the other boys. And then the third brother, the elder brother, Teddy, comes home from the US, and he's a philosophy professor and is married with two boys. And he brings with him his wife, Ruth, who the family actually don't know about. They don't know about Ruth or the boys, but the boys don't come back with them. And they all continue to be nasty to one another. It's often deeply misogynistic, and it's often very unpleasant. But there's a lot of subtext, I think, which is what the play is really all about. And I kind of, what I found this time is I found myself enjoying the ambiguity. So maybe it's just a bit, well, I thought it'd be a bit of a revelation for me, really. I think Sutra Gilmore's set is a kind of homage to Francis Bacon. It's got this red frame and red floor. In the sort of programme note, it talks about what was happening in that period and Francis Bacon kind of figured in that, and I think it's some sort of homage to him. It's a very sort of, I thought, very, very good soundtrack or music. It was very sort of atmospheric and particularly dramatic lighting. I thought the lighting was outstanding. So I thought it was a good production, because it was menacing, as the play is, but it was also humorous and, to me, very sort of strikingly different to other productions of the play I'd seen before. The cast is excellent. I mean, Ron Cook is brilliant, I think, as Max. And there's sort of hints of a paedophile past in the play. Keith Allen actually plays Sam in a very camp way, which I haven't seen done before. But there is a kind of suggestion that, you know, he's gay at a time when homosexuality was illegal. And I think he's kind of taken his lead from that. John McMillan is, you know, plays the particularly dumb younger brother very well. Gary Kemp, I think, is quite an interesting character. And he plays it quite well, because he's rather dominant with his wife, but he's quite, what's the word, more of a gentle soul with his family, really. I didn't get John Sim because he was ill that night, but I have to say his understudy, John Hastings, was extremely impressive, and he was word perfect, and the characterization was indeed very good. And then finally we have Gemma Chan, who I'd seen most recently on television in Humans, and it seemed to me that she just kind of walked off the set and was playing the role, in the same way she played an android on TV. But I thought it was an impressive performance. It was a very ice-cool kind of Ruth, which I think is how she's meant to be, really. You know, there I am going to Pinter and enjoying it again. So thank you, Jamie Lloyd, I think, because I think that he has taken now a very different take on Pinter on two occasions. And for me, it's opened up the Pinter world again, really. Nick, what did you think?
Yeah, I actually, when they announced Gemma Chan, I immediately thought, well, I think Jamie Lloyd's watched Humans, because you can immediately see where that performance would make you want to see her play Ruth, and there is kind of a similarity in the way she plays it, in this, yeah, kind of robotic way. And, you know, I think I remember the last RSC production I saw it, and I remember talking about Ruth's being very doll-like, so it is very much what that character is. And I think what Jamie Lloyd's doing very much with this production, and I know that this is something that a lot of people haven't liked about it, is that he's putting everything out on the surface that is normally kind of buried away between layers and behind layers and layers of subtext and kind of menace and pauses. And I think particularly where he's doing that is in the characterizations. I think the characters are very much distilled down to one very basic characteristic. So you do have the doll-like Ruth, you've got the kind of very alien in his own home Teddy, who's kind of very prissy, a sort of professor figure, and you've got Joey, who is normally kind of a bit of a dim character. Here he's basically kind of grunting his lines in a sort of monotone. It's very much cutting down to the basic elements of the characters. And, you know, I went with somebody who, he's a big Pinter fan, and particularly in the first half, he didn't like the approach. I think he warmed to the style and the performances a bit in the second act. I mean, this is probably the Pinter play I've seen the most times, and I do like it. And there are certainly things I missed about the usual kind of approach. But to me, I was glad that Jamie Lloyd went for this different approach. Because, as you say, there is a tendency with Pinter to be very reverential and to follow to the word of every stage direction and every pause. And I don't think that's particularly healthy for continuing to make interesting productions in the future. I don't think I would like Samuel Beckett very much anyway, but it certainly doesn't help that there are these restrictions put on how he can be performed by his estate. And I don't think it'd be healthy for Pinter to go the same way. I think it's good that at least to try things that are not, because again, this is somebody with an incredibly specific style that he's associated with. And the things do work very effectively in that way. But I think it's also very healthy to try something different and to see how it works in a different way. And I think maybe there are things that I missed. You know, I normally enjoy this kind of very vague sense of menace to the play, which here, it's not there because it's all very much, and it's surprising how much is actually in the script. It tells you exactly what these people are doing. But normally when it's played kind of hyper-realistically, it feels like it's much more mysterious. So it is something that I do normally enjoy seeing, but I also really enjoyed seeing a different take on it. And I think it's important that people like Jamie Lloyd are doing things like this with Pinter, because it's kind of going to keep his work alive, treating it in different ways and not just as a museum piece, because it will very quickly become that if everybody has a single kind of style of production they want to do with it. So it's probably not the best production of The Homecoming I've seen, but it is an interesting one and I enjoyed it, and I think it's a very valid take on the play.
Jamie Lloyd apparently was a friend of Pinter's. They'd worked together. I can't remember which play they'd worked on now.
He has been directing Pinter for quite some time. There was a double bill at what eventually became the Pinter Theatre quite a few years back.
Lover and Collector.
The Lover and the Collector.
What Jamie Lloyd says, though, is that Pinter is happy for people to take an interpretation, or was happy to take an interpretation on his plays, and also said all this stuff about pauses was complete rubbish. He's talked about his relationship with Pinter and said that Pinter was happy for people like him to, you know, do what they wanted with it, really. So it's
but this is the thing, there aren't these restrictions that there are on Beckett, but I think people have been, productions in the past, you know, directors have been imposing them as if there are, as if it is a sort of holy text that can't be deviated from.
Yeah, but I don't think Pinter's ever said that, has he? He's just...
This is the thing. There's no reason to do it. It's just something that people have fallen into over the years of being incredibly reverential.
Even though it seems to be the only one who is there. Yeah. Really, but there you go. Tim, what did you think?
I don't really have too much to add. I did see John Symonds and was impressed by him. He does seem to be somebody who very much inhabited his role. I like that interplay. It is such a good cast, you know, almost obvious, although I did say to somebody, you've got Keith Allen and Ron Cook, and they weren't sure which one was going to play Max. So it's interesting to see Keith Allen almost playing against type, although I think it was the best choice in the end. I'm not absolutely certain that Keith Allen would have been as good a Max as Ron Cook was. But overall, I was impressed by this, and it is one of those plays that does make you icky because of the idea of talking a woman into basically becoming a prostitute and for her to accept it. And almost for the first time, I got to see in this play why she would want to do it. Because before, when I've seen this play, and I've seen this play sort of four or five times, I've not really understood why she would want to do it. And I really got the feeling in this that, almost for the first time, that she is genuinely trying to escape, that she is utterly miserable where she is, and there is that kind of escape. And also the feeling that it's not actually going to happen quite in the way that the boys at home imagine it's going to be. You can see very clearly that she's taken control. And I think that's something that Pinter talked about, that he wanted the woman to be in control in the end. And I think that's it's very clear here that she is very much in control. So it was different, but I was sort of impressed by that, and it stopped me feeling uncomfortable about that these boys are going to exploit the woman. They're not, in the end. You don't feel like that anything that's going to happen is completely under her control at the end of the play, which is something I slightly prefer and makes me able to accept this play more. We're now going to talk about Macbeth at the Young Vic. This play has been directed by Carrie Cracknell in association with Lucy Gurin, who is an Australian choreographer. It's been designed by Lizzie Clacken, and what we get is a large perspective tunnel. It stars John Heffernan as Macbeth and Anna Maxwell-Martin as Lady Macbeth. Nick, tell me more about this and what you thought of it.
As you say, it's jointly directed by Carrie Cracknell and Lucy Gurin, and the latter is a choreographer. So the idea is that this is a combination of traditional Shakespeare's text, scenes spoken through the text, and choreography that adds atmosphere and tells certain parts of the story. So as you say, you've got John Heffernan and Anna Maxwell-Martin as Macbeth and Lady Macbeth. And they're quite an interesting kind of take on the couple. I felt as if they were very much both characters who were kind of caught up in events rather than really in control of them as much as perhaps they think they are. But the trouble really with this production is that the characterization and the verse speaking is very much secondary to the style of it. It's tricky. I didn't like this production, and I kind of wanted to. I was sitting there looking at it and thinking that it really should have worked for me. There was a lot that I was kind of hoping would work for me with the way the choreography kind of attempts to have a creepy element of the three witches and the way they kind of make their prophecies and influence events. There's a lot of scope to kind of make for a lot of memorable moments and creepiness. And I didn't think any of that was taken advantage of. And I think what it is, there's a few things that I think are a problem. I think given the way it's very much been sold as a dance-based production, I was kind of expecting the elements to be a bit more integrated with each other. But it very much feels, with kind of having two people listed as director, it does feel as if before they started rehearsing, they parceled out half of the play to Carrie Cracknell and half of the play to Lucy Guerin and went, okay, these are going to be the spoken parts and these are going to be the dance parts. Because it is basically as if you've got a heavily cut down version of the text interspersed with dance segments. They are like interludes, and there's only a few scenes where they're really kind of using the text and the dance to kind of complement each other. So I think it feels like a real missed opportunity in a lot of ways. And the visuals also I found very confused, because the look of this tunnel that they're in is, it kind of reminded me of sort of an underground car park. And with the very garish costumes that they're wearing, I kind of felt like the idea was that they were setting it among a South American drug cartel and these were kind of deals going on in these kind of shadowy spaces. But then what's weird is for the actual battle scenes, you do get them in camouflage gear, dressed as actual soldiers. So I did kind of sit there at times wondering what exactly they were trying to say these characters actually were. You know, they'd transposed the story to a modern setting of some description, but exactly what that modern setting is, I couldn't have told you. I hadn't heard good things about it going in, but I had hopes that there might be something interesting about the way it's worked out. But for me, it's got a lot of interesting ideas, but nothing really comes together properly in a lot of different ways. Julie, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I think a lot of what you said is really interesting, and I do agree with some of what you've said, but I think it's those things that I really liked about it. So that sense of not quite being clear where you were, and the underground car park thing, I thought was a really good comment, because often Macbeths do seem to be set in underground car parks. I'm thinking of the Liverpool Everyman production, which was clearly in that kind of setting. What I thought, it was quite disjointed, and that made me feel uncomfortable, and that's the kind of thing I liked about it. The sense of being cabin cribbed, confined, everything closing in all the time. And I quite liked the dichotomy between the dancers, which were quite eerie, disjointed in the way they approached the dancers. And then clearly the acting cast, because I do agree, it felt like two different companies, but they jarred against each other. So you got John Heffernan speaking the verse and being quite gentle in the way he spoke the verse, but he actually is really evil, and that was quite unnerving for me. And it felt like it was terror on terror, so they used some of the torture methods that we hear about in the news, and that was really uncomfortable. I that kind of unnerved me. I liked the way they did the 2 hours strike through as well, because you knew it was just building and building and building. So I actually liked the way they did it. I was really interested in it. I think for all the reasons you didn't like it, Nick, because it did jar, because it felt disjointed, that's what I liked about it. That's what kept my interest through it. So I'm probably in a minority, because I've seen some of the reviews and heard other people. So yeah, I think quite a few people are disappointed, but it just worked for me.
Gareth?
Well, I'm going to be Mr. Positive then, because I thought it was wonderful. I'm used to seeing Shakespeare in other forms. You know, I do go to opera and ballet quite a bit, so I'm used to seeing adaptations of Shakespeare as ballets or as operas. So I approach this really as seeing an adaptation of Macbeth rather than seeing Macbeth. That probably helps. So I approached it, therefore, as an adaptation, and I think that might help in a way. I just thought, yes, they were using actors and dancers, because some of the people were actually dancers first and foremost. And yes, there is a difference between the way they approach both speech and indeed performance. So I can understand how you can see that as being disjointed, perhaps. But for me, it's the kind of big picture really is this kind of vision of the play. I just thought it looked brilliant in this kind of tunnel that goes back forever. And I thought that the movement and indeed the soundtrack as well, and the extraordinary lighting, which cast shadows all over the place. I just thought all of those things kind of added together to create a look that I just found was compelling. I just couldn't take my eyes off it, really. And although I accept that clearly there must be cuts and some of the verse speaking clearly wasn't good enough, the overall effect for me was of a thrilling piece of theatre, for want of a better word. And I enjoyed it very much. And my companion who came with me is... I wasn't expecting him to like it, to be honest. After it started, I don't know anyone like this. And actually, he was even more enthusiastic than me. And he's perhaps takes a more conventional approach and certainly doesn't take an adaptation approach to this kind of thing. So I think it's one of the best Macbeths I've seen. And I really like the way the young Vic is doing stuff that's challenging us, really. I mean, I think both The Measure for Measure and this were very original, very different takes on these plays. And I just think that is a breath of fresh air, really. Because particularly, whilst the RSC for me, and I've seen a lot less of the RSC than either Nick or Julie have, but the stuff I've seen has just been so conservative. You know, the RSC's almost got this kind of designer Shakespeare style now that I'm frankly finding a little bit dull, really, or the stuff I've seen. So for me, it's just a breath of fresh air to go to the Young Vic and have somebody kicking you in the ribs and waking you up and making you look at something differently. So I would absolutely recommend it to anybody other than a purist, I think.
I enjoyed this quite a lot, although I have to say the choreography in it, I found it got in the way, especially towards the end. I was quite happy with them replacing the porter's speech, which I always find rather boring, frankly. It goes on for far too long, and they replaced that entirely with some rather jokey choreography, and I was quite fine with that. The final battle scene, which just seemed to go on for ages, and we didn't get some of the lines that might have helped. They are using a very cut down cast, so they can't do all the difficult stuff. They can't introduce a whole load of characters, so you don't get anyone. I don't think you get Seawood or anything like that in this. So you accept the cuts, but in the end, I just felt we were getting just too much dancing in it, and it spoiled my enjoyment of what otherwise I was certainly enjoying. You might want to see John Heffernan. I mean, he has a big fan base, and you might want to see him and indeed Anna Maxwell-Martin in something more conventional, because they are very suited to these parts in many ways. They were good for what they did, but I think what I tweeted was a little bit more dialogue and a little less choreography, because it just got in the way too much in the end, towards the end. I mean, I don't think it was too bad at the beginning, but it's just a little bit too much, and I just felt I was missing too much of the play. But I agree, Shakespeare ought to be adapted and played with a bit. We shouldn't be too reverential on it, and we've had quite a lot of fairly dull Shakespeare's at the Globe this year. They've been good and worthy, but a little bit safe. And it's nice to see other people doing Shakespeare where they're prepared to take more of a risk.
I just wanted to be a bit creeped out by it, and I wasn't.
It's interesting how I actually thought the battle scenes were amongst the best battle scenes I've ever seen, because 12 people in a confined space and the movement just, for me, made the battle scenes quite a lot more realistic.
We're now going to talk about As You Like It at the Olivier Theatre. This is a production directed by Polly Findlay and designed by Lizzie Clacken. It stars Rosalie Craig as Rosalind, Patsy Farron as Celia, with Mark Benton as Touchstone, Paul Chahidi's Jaques, Joe Bannister as Orlando, John Ram as Duke Senior, and Leo Ringer as Duke Frederick, along with others such as Alan Williams. It's been running a while at the National Theatre, but we haven't been able to get to talk about it yet. It's a fairly modern dress production, and in fact we start off in what looks like an office, which seems to be a very unsuitable place to suddenly have a wrestling match. But they do transform the office later in rather a clever way, I thought. Julie, tell me more about this production, what you thought of it.
I did like it, but there were things about it that jarred a little bit. I was really pleased to see an As You Like It that wasn't so traditional like the one we saw this year at the Globe, so that was quite refreshing. You go into the theatre and characters start coming on stage into this office scene, and they've all got plants on the desk, so I wasn't kind of clear if it was an office or a laboratory, and it was a sense of nature being false, really. And I thought, oh, this is quite promising, something really, really different. And I suppose when you set up the court, you've got to think about how the scenes in the forest counteract the court scenes. And I think they did that transfer from the court to the forest quite well. And the forest was a bit like Michael Boyd's production a few years ago, where the forest is really dark and cold and bitter to start with, and then it brightens up towards the end. And they had the foresters on kind of swings in the forest, making like clicking noises that sounded like rain. And I thought that was quite effective. And the forest opened right back to the back of the stage, and there was a mirror at the back of the stage. And that reminded me of the mirrored stage that Polly Finlay had done in Stratford this year for The Merchant of Venice. So quite liked all those effects. I saw Polly Finlay's Arden of Faversham and also her Merchant of Venice in Stratford, and I wasn't really impressed with either of those. I felt with those two productions, ideas didn't seem to go anywhere. And in the Arden of Faversham, she had all these characters in kind of work overalls, and they stayed in these work overalls throughout the play, and I found that really jarring. And there was a little bit of that in This As You Like It, but I think what was better about This As You Like It than the other two of Polly Findlay's productions was that things did develop and things started to contrast, and I found that really interesting. I like Mark Benton's real comic touchstone. There was a real sense of having a comic as touchstone, and I think that worked really well. I did like Patsy Fearon's Celia. She was kind of gawky and awkward, and I could see that all the way through the production. She kind of kept that up. There wasn't that massive change in the character that you sometimes get with Celia, where she's very confident in the car and then she goes into the forest and she's slightly at sea in the forest. I thought with Patsy Fearon there's a real sense of a through line, and I think her Celia worked much better than her Portia did. The only thing that was slightly disappointing, and I really liked Joe Bannister as an actor, but I just didn't think the Rosalind and Orlando made me believe that they were in love with each other. There was just a disjoint between the two of them. There wasn't that excitement of being together and wanting them to be together. I don't know if it was the lack of chemistry between the two actors, but that didn't quite work for me. But overall, really enjoyed it, and I loved the way they did the sheep, and maybe you two talk a little bit about the sheep. What did you think, Nick?
I actually really liked the production, although it's far from being one of the funniest As You Like It's I've ever seen. So normally that would really put me off it, but I think it's just incredibly charming. And I thought Rosalie Craig is not a classic Rosalind. She's not a Rosalind for the ages. I don't think we'll be remembering her performance for years to come, unfortunately. But she's fine, though, and I actually quite liked the relationship with her and Joe Bannister's Orlando. I thought they were very kind of sweet together, and I would disagree with that. I liked that relationship, although, I think she's slightly out of her depth in this kind of major role. I think I disagreed on a few points with you, because I didn't find Mike Benton that memorable, really, as a touchstone. I mean, it's a tricky part, because a lot of it is topical comedy stand-up from the time, which is tricky when it's, you know, probably one of the reasons that it didn't get revived very early on in Shakespeare's time, because not very topical after a couple of years, let alone a couple of centuries. I mean, it was fine, but again, I didn't think there was anybody I had an actual problem with in this production, so that was a positive again. But he wasn't really a standout for me. I mean, Paul Chahidi's always going to be a standout in anything, and I think he's a very good Jaques. And yeah, I definitely agree on Patsy Fearon. I mean, she's definitely one of these people who can do a lot with the tiniest little facial expression in the background, and she's often the funniest thing in any show. I mean, I remember it was only a couple of years ago that she was in Live Spirit in the West End, and just a very small part as the maid, and everybody then was talking about how she stole that show, and very quickly, you don't always see people who look promising getting the exposure quite as much as you hope, and she, I think, has very quickly started rising through the ranks, so it's really good to see. I mean, the transformation of the set is incredibly impressive. It was slightly dampened the night I went to see it, because after it got a huge round of applause just for the set change, it then had a technical issue and they had to stop the show for 5 minutes and get it fixed, but it doesn't change the fact that the transformation itself looked amazing. As I say, it's maybe not the funniest, but it is a really charming production. Polly Findlay's pulled something off really with this, because she has gone for this slightly darker approach, the kind of the more dangerous forest, which is certainly in the text, but I think when people actually try to do it on stage, it doesn't always work. The absolute nadir for me was the Sam Mendes production, which was just the person I went with asked me if I was absolutely sure it was meant to be a comedy, because it was just an utter couple of hours of misery. So I think it is a tricky thing to pull off, and I think it really has been pulled off here. So it's a production that people seem to be a bit down on. I'm not sure why. It's just really kind of, there's lots of interesting ideas about it. Yes, as you said, there's the scene with the sheep is one that I think a lot of people will be talking about after seeing it. And it kind of feels like one that everybody wanted in on, because there's kind of actors in there who are actually, their characters are actually in that scene. And you kind of see them pop on to be sheep just for like 10 seconds, then go off and get changed because they have to be in the scene as their actual character. So it feels like something that everybody was having a lot of fun with and just wanted to get in on. And I think there is that sense there of kind of a company that's working together and really enjoying themselves putting together the show. It's one of the Shakespeare comedies I've seen the most, and it's probably my favourite Shakespeare comedy. So I can be very critical of it. And this was different to what I've seen before, and not in a bad way. It could have been funnier, but I didn't really miss that. It had so much charm that it didn't need that.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the Azetta named London Theatre Podcast page on Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com. The podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.